This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.
Welcome back to our weekly Q&A with Layla. We're here with our nutritionist in residence, Layla Mudin, registered dietitian, master's degree in nutrition, and we're answering your questions. Your questions can come to us to radioprogram@AOL.com. And what do we got in the mail bin?
Okay, we've got an email from Cheryl. Would using an over-the-counter progesterone cream help my bones? My T-score is negative 2.5. In addition, I'm taking your osteoporosis supplement protocol along with Ostera and Ostinol. So Cheryl is right at the border of osteoporosis as at a negative 2.5 T-score reading.
Exactly. So a minus 2.4 would be osteopenia, and a minus 2.6 is osteoporosis, mm-hmm. and the borderline is minus 2.5.
Yeah.
So the question is, will progesterone help? And the answer is, it might, but not very much. And it's somewhat controversial. It was the contention of Dr. John Lee, who is a real natural progesterone proponent.
Yes.
Progesterone was a great thing to take in menopause.
Mm-hmm. Because
it helps with symptoms for mm-hmm. sure. It can take the edge off hot flashes. It can take the edge off anxiety. It can deepen sleep. And it may help bone a little bit, but it's not that strong. The business end of hormone replacement therapy for bone is estrogen, and even estrogen doesn't do that much.
That's interesting.
Estrogen may somewhat slow the progression, but I've not seen mm-hmm. it build bone. Mm-hmm. And you know, the androgens are stronger, like testosterone and DHA, but that's limited in females. Females can take some.
Yes.
Progesterone is kind of weak. Mm. So I would say that's not the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think she should follow the protocol.
Yes.
Do weight-bearing exercise.
Mm-hmm. And especially weight-bearing exercise.
And then wait for the requisite 2 years, because they make you wait 2 years
yes.
between tests, and see if it's progressed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether their program includes strontium, but strontium's our big gun for osteoporosis.
It is. So take one or two in the evening at bedtime or so would be the best dose. Cheryl, if you're not already on a clean diet, get on one, because that's the first order of business for your bone health.
Yeah, you know, we talked a little bit about that in a recent podcast with Jim Lavelle. And he was talking about acidity. Now, I'm not the biggest believer in this acid-base, you know, thing with that everybody should be alkaline, alkaline, alkaline. But one thing is that
has its drawbacks too, being
yeah.
alkaline.
But that being said, the average American is much too acidic. Why? Because they drink soda, which is very acidifying.
They
have
bread.
A lot of sugar.
Yes.
They have a lot of
refined grains. Acidic.
Those
yes.
are all acidic.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, animal protein is somewhat acidic. But if you have animal protein in a paleo diet with lots of vegetables, you'll still be net alkaline. It's
Absolutely.
The vegetables and fruits that mm-hmm. alkalinize you.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is, you know, simply getting off your butt and oxygenating will alkalinize you.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
Because you know, I think Facebook is acidifying. Too much Facebook
and
it acidifies your blood.
And using those the urine strips to test for alkalinity, acidity, that's not the best measure.
No.
Because look, get up in the morning, have a green smoothie, you're going to have a more alkaline urine for a few hours. But then homeostasis will prevail.
Yep, yep.
You're going to come back to somewhere in the area of neutral. So why are you chronically pushing your body into more alkalinity when it really wants to be in the neutral area?
Yep.
And urine, the urine sticks measurement is not anything to compare with serum.
Yeah, which is very hard to get at because even if you draw blood, the blood is exposed to air and it changes the acid-base balance. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a procedure that does give you your acid-base balance, but it's kind of painful. I guess maybe these days they figured out less painful ways to get arterial blood gases.
What you're eating, what you're doing, and so forth. It changes. It's like blood pressure is an accelerator. It depends on what you're doing, what you're feeling, what's happening, so forth and so on.
Well, the reason we mentioned acidity in relationship to osteoporosis is because in an acid state, in an effort to buffer the blood and render it more alkaline, you draw calcium out of your bones. Mm-hmm. So the bones being sort of a bank for minerals, you pull those minerals out. So acidity is a risk factor. And of course, the American diet, I mean, you may say, well, isn't it just about the amount of calcium and vitamin D in the diet? It's if you're on a pro-inflammatory, acidifying diet, that will promote osteoporosis. Yeah.
And again, you know, we measure blood tests that are important for bone health, like vitamin D. We look at magnesium. It's also helpful to look at the amount of omega-3 fatty acids. Nobody is low in calcium. That's a medical condition. That's not about osteoporosis at all. Anybody with osteoporosis, their calcium readings are well within the normal range. So it's not all about the calcium.
Because why? Because you have pounds of calcium in your body.
Yeah.
And where is that located? In your bones. It's
in
a
your
bank.
Bones. It's a bank.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's, I mean, you need some dietary calcium.
Sure.
But, you know, to pour, you know, guzzle milk and take, you know, like, 2,000 milligrams of calcium, that's not the answer.
No, eat some broccoli and almonds and kale and collards and wild Alaskan salmon and sardines, and you get plenty of calcium right there. Make your own soup and stew at home. The calcium
bones.
Comes
with
out
bones.
With the bones, of course. The bones, the meat on the bones, all of that calcium renders into the broth, and that's one of the best ways.
Well, I start around a little earlier this time of year, right around the cold weather. When the weather gets cold, I start the crock pot. And so the chicken bones go, you know, the
Or even with any leftover meat on the carcass, it's perfectly fine.
Yeah,
it's
you can do that, you know, with beef bones, whatever, you know, like T-bone steak bones and things like that.
Right.
You make a nice beef broth.
Lamb, put it all together, put it all in there and cook it, and have a mug of this every day. In place of your cup of coffee, for example. You know, bone broth is the new cup of Joe.
Hey, maybe we could start a chain. Like a bone broth chain.
Bone broth.
I think they have them.
I think
they
have some out there already. Yeah. Yeah.
You think
broth master.
Do you think they'll take over from Starbucks?
No.
I'll have a grande latte, you know, mochaccino bone broth.
Right. Yeah. Well, they've already got the way you people take whey protein or pure rice protein powders. They've got bone broth that's already been processed that
Make
way.
Easy,
and,
you could,
and they're flavoring it, chocolate, vanilla, and all this other stuff. Make a pot of soup.
Yeah.
It really doesn't take any. Throw everything into the pot of water, enough water to cover that chicken carcass and the bones, and throw in there some celery, carrots, onions. Let it simmer for hours.
Yeah.
You've got bone broth.
It's just those millennials won't do that, though. They want to open up a packet and it's
and have it taste like chocolate.
And they, and go to the hot water dispenser in their Silicon Valley offices and have their cup of bone broth.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's so.
Soon they'll put it in the protein bars as well.
Oh, it is. I have a bar that I like. It's made with cashews and coconut. And it's also got bone broth in it. It's Primal Kitchen. Primal Kitchen.
Yeah.
That's the Marc Cezanne brand.
Uh-huh.
Which is, it's got some bone broth powder in it. Yeah. Okay.
All right. So our next.
Don't get me wrong. I eat those bars very sparingly because they're not a substitute for food.
They're not.
They're like,
They're good in a pinch.
They're good in a pinch. And, you know, like if I'm traveling or something, I'll throw them in a bag, you know, like, it's like, I was on a plane and I just said, oh, I have a whole bunch of these. Let me just, and the food was like, forget about it. It was like, look, I don't want whatever you're serving. I'll just eat my healthy bars and it'll tide me over. And
there
people were envious. They were looking. It was like, Oh, where can I get one of those? Like, I'm not sharing with you.
Wait for your bag of peanuts.
Right. Yeah. Pretzels.
Pretzels. Exactly.
Oh, they don't serve peanuts anymore because that's like...
Oh, that's right.
It's like
allergy.
Death. That's mm-hmm. like instant death on mm-hmm. the plane.
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
like...
You can't inhale
right.
the skins or the peanut
it's,
powder.
It's liability. Yeah. Right, right.
Well, okay. We have an email from Kat. I was wondering where to find information about the anti-inflammatory diet that Dr. Hoffman had a podcast about recently.
Well, that's strange.
Speaking of anti-inflammatory.
So this is question is, it makes me wonder, because if you listen to the podcast,
uh-huh.
it was about the anti-inflammatory diet.
Right.
And I interviewed Dr. Seaman about S-E-A-M-A-N.
Mm-hmm.
His name is David Seaman, about the deflame diet. Now, what's interesting about this guy, he's a chiropractor. And he actually coined the term anti-inflammatory diet.
Did he?
Yeah.
Wow.
So he did it like 20 years ago.
Mm.
Okay. And it's a revolutionary idea. Now everybody talks about the anti-inflammatory diet. So he said, you know, I invented the term, so let me write the book.
Yeah.
And it's called the deflame diet.
Mm-hmm.
And it is his belief. Now you might say, well, oh, that's a vegetarian diet, right? Anti-inflammatory diet. You know, and I didn't know when I was getting into it what he was going to say, but he mirrors exactly our view of what an anti-inflammatory diet is. I said, is meat okay? Is meat pro-inflammatory? He goes, no.
Yeah.
Meat in moderation is fine, as long as you have plenty of fresh fruits and vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
I said, what about grains? He said, no, avoid grains because they can be pro-inflammatory.
Absolutely. All those omega-6 fats.
Oh, and then vegetable
derived.
Oils. That's the other one.
Vegetable oils, terrible.
The refined vegetable oils. Mm-hmm. He had a special place in hell for the refined vegetable oils.
Yeah, that American Heart is still touting as healthy.
And they said,
that's malpractice.
They say, don't have butter. Make sure you have
Corn oil, soybean oil. That's in all of our mayonnaise, everyone.
Right.
Unless you're getting an avocado oil-based mayonnaise.
Which I now have.
Yeah.
Which
I now have. Me too.
Because I was putting all that soy oil in my body because I like mayo. I like to slather it on, you know, I mix it with my leftover salmon or with tuna or with chicken sometimes.
Sure. You know. Chicken salad.
Yeah.
Shrimp salad.
Like I strip the chicken from the bones, you know, because.
Deviled eggs. Yeah.
That's what you had for breakfast,
yeah,
you told
me. Yeah, I
did.
I had deviled eggs this morning with salmon in it,
and
avocado mayonnaise,
as we recorded, this is almost 2 o'clock, and it's tidying you over.
It is tidying me over. I'm absolutely fine. And I had breakfast around 7.
You're not bonking.
No.
Now, what if you had the DASH diet breakfast of...
Oh, no. Oatmeal and toast?
Oatmeal and toast with jam.
I'd be asleep at my desk.
And a glass of pineapple juice.
I'd be asleep at my desk.
Okay.
I wouldn't be able to complete a sentence. I would be groggy and hangry. I would have had to go out and get something to eat at 10 a.m.
Layla, you want to do a podcast?
No, I don't want to do a podcast. Get out of here.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
So Deflame is the book?
Deflame Diet. Mm-hmm. Deflame your diet, body, and mind.
Wonderful.
And in it, I mean, I'm not going to go into the details of the diet because he does in the book. And, you know, and surely there are places on the internet where you can find the diet.
Yep.
So there's the answer to that person.
Great. Kat, thank you for your question. Ah, we have an email from Jen. I take several different vitamins, vitamin E, B vitamin C, etc. And I was also taking magnesium. But I read somewhere that magnesium has bad interactions with certain drugs and supplements. Can you give me some information about that?
Yes.
You can take your magnesium with your supplements, absolutely. Magnesium will interfere with drugs. One in particular that comes to mind is any thyroid replacement medication. It can be problematic because it actually interferes with thyroid medication, as do calcium and iron. So you want to space any thyroid medication with magnesium by at least 3 to 4 hours would be optimal.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think the reactions are that profound or like super dangerous.
Right.
But one in particular is with antibiotics, particularly the tetracycline, doxycycline. Calcium and magnesium seem to interfere with them.
Hmm.
I'm looking at what they list in a standard table of interactions. And they say that magnesium can interfere with what are called calcium channel blockers, which include medications like nifedipine, which goes under the name Procardia, or verapamil, Calan, Isoptin, or diltiazem, which is also called Cardizem, or Dynacirc, or Plendil. And so there might be a problem with the calcium channel blockers because magnesium is a calcium channel blocker. Yes. So I don't know, maybe it augments the effects, which might not be bad. I mean, you could take less of the medication and a little bit of magnesium. It shouldn't be a big deal. I don't think
that's
there's a lot of...
That's a wonderful idea.
Yeah, I don't
taking
think there's...
Taking a supplement so you could take less medication.
Yeah. Hmm. You know, what... I don't see a lot of problems here.
No, not at all. The different forms of magnesium to take, they come in many different forms. Magnesium citrate is ideal for constipation, muscle cramp and pain as well, but magnesium glycinate is also very good for that, for aches, pains, body aches, muscle cramping, as is magnesium malate, which may be the most bioavailable, and that's Jigsaw.
Jigsaw, I think it's also in reacted magnesium, which
reacted
we also...
Reacted magnesium, another nice product. Yeah. Magnesium taurate, which is primarily for heart, blood vessel function, blood pressure, mitral valve prolapse, all of that, because it also contains taurine. Taurine, which is a beneficial amino acid with blood pressure, also has a little bit of a diuretic effect. I think magnesium orotate, which used to be in vogue back in... the days when I was with Dr. Atkins.
He was very much in favor of that. Yeah.
I think some of it is coming back around the orotate form of magnesium.
It's thought to be more bioavailable. Yeah. It is more expensive and it's lower potency.
The least bioavailable is magnesium oxide. That'll cure any constipation quick. The stuff literally runs through you.
Runs through you. Yeah. Doesn't get absorbed.
No. Hmm. No. So these would be, those would be the particular the forms of magnesium to take. But magnesium is perfectly safe, Jen, to take with all of your...
Most things.
Yeah, your vitamins and minerals.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we have time for another question.
Okay. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. What are your thoughts on testosterone cypionate? Also called depo testosterone injectable.
I don't like it that much. I don't like it that much. You know, generally, I endeavor when I give testosterone to use the natural cream. But when you can't inject the natural cream, it has to be a synthetic testosterone called testosterone cypionate, which is kind of for time release when you inject it.
Yeah.
It works pretty good. The problem is with injections is that they're given once every week or once every 10 days or once every 2 weeks. So initially you get a big surge of testosterone and then it wears off. So you get a peak and a trough. Mm-hmm. And if you apply it daily to your skin, you're going to get a steady state. Now, what I notice is that some people, especially very fat men, require the injections because they just don't absorb enough through their skin to alleviate their low testosterone.
Another question about the injectables. Do you need SERMs?
SERMs.
Yeah.
Well, you need not SERMs, in my opinion. SERMs are what are designed to, they're used as a cancer treatment. But, mostly they're applicable to women, like tamoxifen, for example, or anastrozole is a SERM. Hormone blockers. Mm-hmm. What you do need is you need aromatization blockers. And so you can use Chrysin, which is a natural thing. That doesn't work that well. Or you can use a little bit of Arimidex, which prevents aromatization of the testosterone because you're getting a pretty high dose there, and some of that testosterone is going to turn to estrogen. Mm-hmm. And then this happens when people abuse steroids.
Yeah.
They'll take too much of the testosterone, and then the men will get, excuse the expression, it's an expression used in the gym, they'll get bitch tits, it's called, which means that they're going to get gynecomastia, which is
and that's because of the conversion.
The conversion,
to estrogen.
So the prudent steroid abuser, because it really is, I'm not in favor of this, will use a little bit of the Rimidex to block that conversion. Okay. You know, maybe a once a week dose is enough.
That would also go for the man with the beer belly, whose fat cells will aromatize
that's testosterone another, but too. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what happens. And or, hey, guess, you know, another thing that does that is alcoholism.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Beer belly.
Yeah, beer belly, but also gynecomastia. And, you know, you see the guy in, you know, the Skid Row guy, and he's like all unkempt, and but he's got a great head of hair.
He does.
You know, he's sleeping on the gutter, and he's like, his pants are stained.
Because his male pattern baldness, dehydrotestosterone, I forget the particular structure, the name of that hormone having to do with testosterone.
Yeah, what happens is that, you know, alcohol prevents the metabolism of estrogen. Mm. And so the estrogen that kicked off by your testosterone doesn't get metabolized. And that's one of the reasons why they tell women, minimize your alcohol intake. And if you've had breast cancer, don't drink.
That's right.
Because you're going to get, you know, just a real uptick in your estrogen from it. But we digress, as we are tend to do. But the digressions are fun.
Yes.
And we still have a couple of questions in the hopper, but we invite you to pose questions. It really shouldn't be too long, a couple of weeks delay perhaps before we get to your questions. Mm-hmm. Next week we'll tackle more.
Yes.
It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, radio program at AOL.com is the place to send questions to. So any final observations, Layla?
The blood pressure guidelines. I know the questions will keep coming. People are upset, but we're individually writing in the newsletter about it to address beneficial ways.
Calm and carry on during this frenetic holiday season.
Yes. And thank you for listening.
And thank you for listening. Thanks for putting us over the 5 million milestone for podcast downloads. It's really awesome to have you as part of our podcast audience. Keep it up. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.